Today's episode of Tech Talks on the Unsettled Media Podcast Network is brought to you by Tech Impact, focused on unlocking prosperity by embracing technology. For more, head to techimpact.it.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Talks with Kathy Simpson. You know, in this episode and with today's guests, we have many years of experience hiring for software companies in a variety of roles, and that's exactly what we were looking for. Our guests, Brian and Ryan, provide insights into their own careers and job experience, and they actually work together at Radian 6 and share some of those experiences too. In this episode, we dive deep into the breadth of skills employers are looking for, the hiring process, and what candidates can expect when they are applying and being interviewed for new roles. We talk resumes, the importance of LinkedIn and community experience, candidate fails in the interviewing process, and what to expect in the first 12 months. For all of the students out there listening and others with experience in looking for something new, this is exactly the type of advice that is invaluable and will help you to gain more confidence as you head into the job search and interviewing process. Let's dive into the show. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talks with Kathy Simpson. I'm your host and really pleased today to have two guests who are no strangers to the technology scene here in Atlantic Canada. And I'm going to let them tell us all about their backgrounds and their careers. And today we're talking about careers, career journeys, and not just technical careers, but more on the marketing and business side as well. We're excited to be here. And we really want to talk to those students or those people out there looking for work. What are the types of things that employers are thinking about? So we're going to dig into that hiring process. So without further ado, I'll start with introducing Brian Dunphy. Brian, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hey, everyone. So I'm Brian Dunphy. I'm a senior director of product development at Cvent. Cvent is the world's leading event technology company. So we create meeting and event software and some hospitality software. We got about 30,000 customers worldwide and about 4,000 employees as well. I guess prior to that, I was a co-founder of One Lobby and Radian 6. And by trade, I guess before I was a people manager, I was a front-end developer and UX designer. So that's sort of my background.
What did you study at school? Where did you go to school? And what got you into this path of not only being an entrepreneur, Brian, but also, you know, selling a company, merging with a big organization like Cvent?
Sure. I'm a high school graduate, but I'm a university dropout. So way to rub salt in the wound there, or Kathy. I went to UNB Computer Science for about 3 years, determined it wasn't really for me, and actually started working with some startups locally, doing web design development type work, graphic design, that type of thing. And eventually just fell in love with it and found opportunities at places like Q1 Labs, worked for many companies around town as well on freelance basis. And in terms of Radian 6, post Radian 6 and co-founding that and working with Ryan here, actually, I was able to start a new company called One Lobby. We raised some money initially. We found what we thought was a good product market fit. And eventually we went to join the team at Cvent with about 5 employees at the time to go change the world of event technology. So,
and it's been quite a year for events in 2020. Why don't you take us a little bit through that? I talked to you, I think, like days after the world kind of shut down because we've been working on something together. And it's been quite a year.
It has been. You know, the event industry is so resilient and it's such a great community of people. It's been a challenging year. You know, a lot of live events or most live events have been canceled in the world. Some countries are starting to get back to it. European countries where they've fared quite well with events and so on. Some countries in Asia as well. But, you know, from a Cvent perspective, we've been providing technology for event professionals for over 20 years. Things like registration platforms, survey platforms, a lot of those things are still very useful in today's pandemic. And in fact, we've pivoted out of the pandemic in some ways to create virtual event solutions. So now we have an excellent product. We're really excited about it. So we've got a lot of folks here in Fredericton, Atlantic Canada, working on that product, actually.
So just before we pass the floor over to Ryan, tell us about the size of Cvent. where you're located and what have you been doing to grow there?
Sure. So here in Atlantic Canada, as a region, we're about 150 people, and we've grown from 5 people over the last 6 years or so. And so Cvent is a global company. We've got 20 plus office locations around the world, 4,000 employees, and 20 years old. So it's been going quite a while. We are based in Washington, D.C. That's where our headquarters is. We've also got an extremely large presence in India, about 2,000 people there. And we continue to grow in a lot of these markets in the U.S. and Canada. We've also got an office in Vancouver here in Canada as well.
Well, Brian, thanks very much. And Ryan, Brian's no stranger to you and vice versa. Your paths have crossed more than a couple times. Tell us a little bit about your background and what you're up to today.
Yeah. First off, just happy to be here with you today, Kathy and Brian as well. So currently I'm the Chief Operating Officer for the Salesforce Marketing Cloud. So Salesforce Marketing Cloud is a division of Salesforce. Salesforce is a large global company. If you haven't heard of it, we're known for making customer relationship management software. If you haven't heard of that, the best way to think about it is we help businesses serve their customers, whether they're other businesses or consumers. So I focus on the marketing part of that, but it's also inclusive of aspects like sales, service, commerce, and other aspects as well. Joined the company when Brian did, actually, with the acquisition of Radiant 6 back in 2011.
You've been around a little bit. You've not always been in New Brunswick, but you're here now. Tell us about your time in the U.S.
Yeah, happy to do that. It's definitely been a career stumble. So if you have not completely planned out your career, that's okay. I was actually born and raised in London, Ontario. Grew up there when I was about 18 or 19, really developed a passion for traveling, loved to backpack, things like that. Thought it would be a great idea to fuel that passion with a degree in geography. So went and did that, pursued a Bachelor of Arts in Geography from Western University. When I graduated, it didn't seem like a great idea because that did not lead to a very clear career path. And so I followed up with a postgraduate diploma at the Center of Geographical Sciences in Nova Scotia. It was an 8-month diploma program focused on remote sensing. So that's, think of that as working with satellite imagery, different types of use cases, environmental sciences, things like that. Unfortunately, after that, after sending out hundreds of resumes, I still could not get a job in Canada, but did unfortunately land something in New York City. So joined a small but growing startup. This was in the, dot-com bubble around 2000. So joined the startup. It was really great entrepreneurial environment, a great first job experience because if you've worked in a startup, you know that you get to do many different things beyond what you're hired for. However, as that bubble burst, so did the company. We were not successful. I was on a visa, found myself with 2 weeks to leave the country on a Greyhound bus back to Toronto. But I picked myself back up. Joined an initiative in North Carolina doing one of the first LIDAR-based floodplain mapping projects. So it was a contract job. It was really great. Was able to pivot that into a career at a company called Leica Geosystems. That was a software company. This was in the early 2000s. So that was in the era of on-premise software. I was hired as a digital photogrammetry support engineer. So think of that as, you know, I was the person that was going out installing the software, upgrading it, troubleshooting it. So it was a great opportunity, a great time of life. Got to travel all over the world. Eventually relocated to Atlanta, Georgia, corporate headquarters there, and I moved along with it. Met my future wife there. And at that time, she was from Europe. I was from Canada. We were on visas. We didn't have a great path without being separated for a long time to stay in the country. So we actually moved over to Europe, got married in my wife's hometown, relocated to Belgium. I was helping out with an acquisition there, still working for Leica. But at that point, I knew we wanted to move to Canada. I needed to find something new. Went to this platform that was pretty new at the time called LinkedIn. Started scrolling through jobs, and that's actually where I found out about Radiant 6. So looked pretty interesting. It was SaaS software, so new technology model, relatively new business model at the time. And I applied cold and managed to get connected with a couple of the founders of the company. Getting hired took a while. It was a long interview process. In the meantime, this was in 2009. My wife and I had moved back to Ontario. We're living in my parents' basement. If you remember, there was also an economic crisis then. So if you're 33 years old and living in your parents' basement, don't give up. Have hope. Eventually got hired at Radian 6. And that was, you know, a scale-up opportunity. So it was a great opportunity to really grow the product management function in the organization leading up to the acquisition, but then also continuing to grow within Salesforce.
And you've got people here in Atlantic Canada, and I think you'd probably have to be living under a rock if you've not heard of Salesforce at this point in time. So let's talk about hiring. And we often talk about talent is a problem here in Atlantic Canada. So I want to talk a little bit about how do you start that process? What do you look for when you're looking at a resume? And how do you find good talent? Brian, maybe start with you. Let's talk about some of those technical roles that are in such high demand. And often I've heard you say, gosh, it's not that easy.
Yeah, it is overwhelmingly hard. And I guess the first problem we have to solve as a community or region is access to candidates. So, I mean, getting people to move here, to start their careers or to continue their careers, training folks that are already here, people that were born and raised in New Brunswick, and having a well-established workforce is really important. So I think the problem that we always face in the region is that many of us are stepping on each other's toes. We're hiring away from one another. So what I'd love to do is bring net new people to the province so that we can have a thriving pool of candidates to choose from. Some of the things that we do at Cvent, at least to create kind of a bit more of a funnel in terms of candidates, we used to do prior to in the before times, let's call it before 2020, we used to do a lot of live events here. So we used to do recruiting happy hours. We used to rent out the back of a bar and invite a bunch of people over. We'd actually have our software deployed and we'd bring people in and they would register there. They would actually check into the mobile app. They would get a badge printed out. They would, experience what it's like to work or to be a Cvent customer. And we used to do that quite successfully. And we had a number of events that got us, 20, 30 applicants that we could kind of choose from at that point. And in terms of finding people, we use the traditional methods. We use LinkedIn, we use word of mouth, we use a lot of referrals. We have an incredible team here locally who have given us just the best referrals we could ever hope for, folks that they've worked with in the past. And in fact, I think that's the way that we grew initially for the first few years. If you hadn't worked with us, you probably weren't getting a job because we were busy trying to find the people that we already worked with, that we had great experience with.
Do you find some of the same things, Ryan? There is this competing with one another, there becomes competition. It might even raise salaries a little bit because of that level of competition when talent is tight.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's really healthy. Like Brian, I think it's a great opportunity to both bring a new talent into the region as well as grooming local talent. So I do think that there's a degree of competition, but I think that's actually something to be encouraged because it helps us just develop the ecosystem.
So I know this may seem, pretty basic type of question here, guys, but I'm going to ask you. When it comes to resumes, what are you looking for? And more importantly, what advice do you give to students who are polishing up their resumes or newcomers that have come to New Brunswick or people who are thinking, I'd like to move into this field? We really would value your insights. Maybe Brian, start with you.
Sure. I think the obvious thing is you're looking for a high level match to technical skills or other skills that you require in the job. But aside from that, especially if you're a newcomer to the industry, let's say you're a recent grad, we're looking for lateral skills or experience that could be beneficial to the position. So if you were involved in things that were, team oriented, if you were involved in side projects as a student working on technology, things like that, that's really important to see. Attention to detail. I hate seeing a resume that has basically nothing in it or what is in it is riddled with errors or, spelling grammatical things are obvious. You get that kind of in a basic resume coaching kind of course. But above all, I think the most important thing that I see in resumes that really make them stand out is passion and interest in their field. So I want to see what community involvement they've had, and community could be volunteering to use their skills in a community that they're involved and interested in, or it could be the technology community as a whole. So going to startup weekends, going to hackathons, being involved in things is really important to me. But also, I mean, if you're a member of a sub-community within society that you're really passionate about, if you're using your skills and applying that to help them, that's an incredible thing to see as well.
So, Ryan, talk a little bit about what do you find similar to Brian, and you yourself in your role are hiring some different skills. So maybe talk about some of the roles that you're hiring for and what might be different than what Ryan said.
Yeah. So in product management roles, often, there isn't as clear cut a path into product management as there is for other functions across, a product organization, like engineering roles, for example. So often in product management, unless you're applying for an associate product management role where we're looking for people right out of school, it might not be your first job. So often people are applying from maybe they've already been in an engineering role, or like me, a support role or a technical documentation role. There's lots of paths into product management. Generally, in terms of what I look for, product management is it's really interesting because it requires a mix of skill sets. So I think of it as a spectrum of, on one hand, we're looking for people with technical skills that can grasp technical problems, work with engineering counterparts, as well as well-developed business acumen on the other side of the spectrum. So as you can imagine, that range of skill sets, nobody's sitting perfectly in the middle, particularly at the start of your career. So often you sit on one side of that. And so what I'm trying to probe for is, where does a person sit on that spectrum? What's their level of adaptability and an ability to learn? I think that's, being able to look at problems with a beginner's mind, learn different skill sets, a hunger to learn. That's certainly something that I probe for. Other than that, I wouldn't say, a well-developed leadership skill set, but at least leadership aptitudes are really important. And within that, for product management, a servant leadership mindset is extremely important. So if you think about product management functions in most companies, certainly places where Brian and I have worked as a product manager, nobody reports for you. You don't work, you can't issue orders. So you have to really lead by influence, example, inspire the team. You're not successful unless the team is successful. So coming to the table with a servant leadership mindset is really important. So I would be looking for examples of, maybe how that's been exhibited in your personal life, in activities that you've involved with, at school, other places. You really need to be able to demonstrate that you can make the team successful. And there isn't really much room for oversized egos and things like that.
One of my favorite jobs, I've been working 30 years, was, this is really going to date myself, I was the product manager for long distance at MBTEL. And when I was the product manager, we went from being in a monopoly environment to a competitive environment. And all of a sudden we were coming up with promotions, and we came up with something called the 10-cent minute. And it was over a certain period of time on Wednesday nights, and the whole country did it, and we blew the network. People were getting fast busies, and it was like, that's how much price ended up being a variable for usage. That was a long time ago, but you're right. Being a product manager, you get to see all aspects of the product, and you need the technical team to be able to deliver. You need to be able to have something that the sales team can deliver upon, and it's got to be compelling. And we just had David Alston here a couple of weeks ago, talking about marketing and sales and the importance. So those are really fun and unique roles. There's no question about it.
Absolutely. It's very, very entrepreneurial within any organization.
Yeah. So when you think about the interviewing process, what I'm finding more and more now is people will send me their LinkedIn profile, their link to their LinkedIn profile, and they say everything's there. Are you seeing that a lot? Do you go and check LinkedIn? How important is it?
Yeah, That's the first thing I do, actually. I tend to look at LinkedIn profile. It's, you know, just the modern resume. So I think that's pretty prevalent in the industry.
I almost exclusively use LinkedIn. In fact, if someone sends me a physical resume, the most interesting thing is it, where's the LinkedIn, you know, link on that resume.
And I think that's just so important, because a lot of students might think, geez, my LinkedIn profile is not very good because I only went to university, instead of thinking about what is their volunteer activity and highlighting their courses and all of that to get up there, because that is where everyone is looking. Now let's get us to the interview process. Nerve-wracking for many. It's now virtual, I assume, Brian. You're probably not meeting nearly as many face-to-face. When you're hiring for technical roles, are there some unique elements of that interview process? Because you're trying to judge their ability to do the work in some degrees. Tell us a little bit about how you do that.
Sure. The advice I like to give to somebody who's going to interview is, picture yourself as a salesperson going door to door and selling a product, but the product is you, right? So you need to tell somebody the value you bring, the impact you can make, the experience you have, that kind of thing. I think that knowledge of the opportunity is really important. So when you walk into an interview, knowing about the company, the products they sell and create in that office, ideally, the industry that they serve. So knowing some things about the size of the industry, the number of events that are held a year, that kind of thing would be really good in our case. And be prepared to talk about yourself. You know, a colleague of Ryan and I, Jerry Carr, once said to me that Atlantic Canadians tend to be modest. And when we were going out to visit Salesforce, he encouraged us not to be modest because we had done something, you know, quite extravagant in scale. And, you know, I took that to heart because I think I experience a lot of this. When people interview with us, they tend to be modest about their accomplishments and what they've done. You know, I've had people come in with 4.3 GPAs and a master's in computer science, and they can't really articulate how much they've actually done, but really they're, you know, that's an incredible accomplishment, right? And also, you know, it's about really understanding what you want as an individual. It's about articulating what kind of job you want, what kind of team you want to work with, that kind of thing. That's really important to me.
Do you do any testing? Do you put them to actually have to look at some problems? I get asked that question quite a bit.
Yeah, and it's controversial, honestly, in the industry. A lot of the technology industry is not it's not standardized. So, I mean, a lot of different companies approach it a different way. Live coding, for instance, is a controversial topic. We do some of that. We also do a cognitive criteria, cognitive aptitude tests, a CCAT, which is kind of a barrier to entry within our company. And it's part of a Vista portfolio process that we do. So we belong to a company called Vista Private Equity. And what they've done is 1.4 million of these tests worldwide. Really great sense for what makes a good employee on the other side. And so we test people in that. And the process is fairly involved. You know, to become an employee, you go through a screening call with a recruiter, you go through a screening call with a hiring manager, back-to-back interviews with probably two or three more people. Some of them are lighter than that. So if you're an entry-level person out of university or college, chances are you're going to experience a lighter interview process. But if you're an experienced person, you'll probably get the 2 to 3 person interview. And then, of course, you know, we go through the internal feedback process to understand if this person is someone we want to hire. And ultimately, we make an offer or we decline. So,
and Ryan, how about you?
Yeah, I would
someone
say,
walks into your door. What are they being met with when they sit in front of in front of Ryan?
Sure. In many ways, similar to Brian, I would say for product management roles, because the, you know, skill set range is quite broad, we don't really get into, you know, technical testing or anything like that. I tend to really focus on both theoretical, scenario-based, and experience-based types of questions. So a lot of it is being able to articulate, you know, the experiences that you've been through and how you think that they will benefit the role and what we're looking for. Like Brian suggested, you know, don't sell yourself short. And I think that, you know, one of the things that's important is I definitely look for diversity. In my experience, diverse teams are more likely to be successful because they've been through many things when you think about the ranges of experience you get across diverse teams. So even if you've had a gap in your resume or something like that, where you were volunteering or traveling or doing something else, I would say like highlight that because, you know, you're bringing more diverse experience to the table, which could really benefit the role.
So I'm going to tell that to my 25-year-old who's on his second year work visa in New Zealand. He's going to bring all that back when he eventually comes back to Canada. He'll be able to talk about all those experiences. Let's have a little bit of fun without revealing too much here, obviously. Do you have some good candidate fails and some really candidate standouts that you think, man, that really worked, or jeepers, gosh, someone needs to tell him or her that's not going to help them. So got some ideas of things that you can help as, you know, extra tips for those listening to us today.
Sure. I can go ahead with that one. So I think, you know, one of the biggest fails, and I actually polled my team. I have a team of about 20 leads in my office who do a lot of interviews. They probably do more than I do at this point. And I think one of the biggest ones is misrepresenting yourself. So you have to walk the walk and you have to talk the talk, and claiming you're an expert or even an intermediate in something you've barely used will never end up well, because the person on the other end of the interview is bound to know, something about that, or maybe even more about that than you do. Right. So there's going to be a revealing factor there. Also overemphasizing your involvement in a project can be really troublesome. So if you claim that you are the sole person that accomplished this massive thing, I mean, somebody can pretty easily read into that. And candidates need to kind of admit when they don't know something, you know, demonstrating humility and realizing that you don't know everything and that you can go learn things and that you're eager to do so is often very important. Another thing would be talking trash about your previous employer. What that tends to do, and what it's meant to do, I think, when somebody does it, is to kind of commiserate with a fellow industry person about an experience that you had. But it tends to reveal a lot about you and how you might behave in a new role. So things like your inability to adapt to a challenging situation, or you might be difficult to work with in general. And in a small market, like Ryan and I are very used to this, chances are somebody knows somebody else that you worked with, or they might know the person you're talking about, right? So it can only really bite you in the end, I think. And then the other thing is that it almost never goes well. So I think you need to keep it high level to illustrate the things you like about your current or past jobs, the pride you felt in achieving goals at that job, and the value that you brought to the team. And, you know, there can be an element of, it's just not the right fit for me, or that kind of thing. But if you go too far, I think you're going to get the opposite outcome here.
It does reveal a lot about you if you do misstep in that interview process, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And your team, because so many of these interviews are multiple layers with team members, they remember. And they have a lot of weight when it comes to final decision-making, of course. Ryan? Any fails that you would suggest, or any real standouts that you're really latching onto when you see that you're having an interview?
Yeah, many of the similar experiences as Brian. I think, you know, when you're in high growth stage and you're hiring quickly, you know, your aperture opens up and your screening might decline a little bit. And so that's when you get these scenarios where, you know, you might have misrepresentation, things like that. Many of the same types of stories. I think the only thing that Brian didn't mention that I'd maybe add would be over-indexing the compensation, you know, things like that, where it's like clear, you know, when you think about the motives, if that's why you're after the job, it's probably not the right reason. You know, generally we're looking for people that are excited by the business problem that we're trying to solve. So I think, you know, on the fail side, that, you know, in addition to the many, many good scenarios that Brian raised, I'd add that one. On the plus side, I think, you know, the level of energy, hustle, and drive that, you know, shows up in the interview, that can always be impressive and often surprising, and then it might not come across in a LinkedIn profile. And then, you know, you just see someone show up with this great energy, and you know that even though they might not have every, you know, technical or, you know, business skill that you're looking for to fulfill the job, you know, they give you confidence that they can learn. So I think, you know, we've definitely seen scenarios like that as well, where you're taking a little bit of a leap of faith on somebody, but then they impress you in the interview and then impress you, you know, even more after you hire them.
One of the things that I like about people when they show up with energy, hustle and drive, as you say, Ryan, it gives you a sense of, is there going to be a good fit with the organization? And are you kind of bouncing ideas off each other? When I think about these entry-level positions and getting started and being new, so much of the work is done in a team environment. There's this old paradigm about a developer who works by themselves. They have a piece of a product that they're working on and they've got a piece of a module that they're coding. And it's just not like that. So when you think about those entry-level positions, what does the first 6 months look like? Are they working in a team environment all the time? Tell us what to expect.
I think, you know, my first advice to anybody who's an entry-level position, this could be software engineer, quality engineer, product manager, anything. You have to be patient. So, I mean, you have to realize that you're the new kid in class. You have to prove your value as soon as possible, but also in a repeatable fashion. Don't over-index and try to, you know, prove everybody that you're so amazing, but then not be able to repeat it, not be able to persist. And in particular, a lot of newcomers to the industry get impatient. They get impatient. They want to get promoted. They want to get paid more, take on more responsibility. I think passion and drive and hustle, as Ryan alluded to, are wonderful things, but it's also rare for that to materialize in the first 18 months or so in a lot of companies. So, good things come to those who just demonstrate that consistency and value. As an example, I have folks in my office who have gone from software engineer one to senior software engineer in just 4 or 5 years. That can be as long as an 8 to 10 year career progression in a lot of companies. So it just shows if you keep your head down and you, you kind of focus on being valuable, good things can come.
What do you think, Ryan?
Yeah, I also would add that I think a lot depends on, you know, where you're coming from. In product management roles, you're certainly operating in a team environment, but it definitely takes time to onboard. And onboarding looks different whether you're joining, you know, a large company like Salesforce, where there's, you know, a well-developed kind of onboarding process, a lot of structure around it. At a high-growth startup, it's entirely different. I recall, Brian, when I joined Salesforce, I don't think we had an IT department. It was bring your own everything and onboard yourself. But with great people around you to help you along the path. So a lot depends on, you know, the type of organization that you're joining. I would say also, you know, what you need to learn in order to contribute. So are you joining a company that's maybe in a different vertical from where your background is? You know, that was the case with me at Radian 6. I'd been building mapping technologies, moving into marketing technologies. It was an entirely different space. So you need to give yourself a little bit of space to learn, not just the, you know, get to know your new colleagues, the people, all those aspects, but often new technologies or new industries, different economic models, you know, things like that.
So Ryan, you brought it up, the differences between joining a startup or a more established firm. You've both done it. You've both been in both environments. Talk a little bit about how significantly different they are.
I think it's extremely different. I joined Radian 6 as a 21-year-old amateur software engineer. And within 5 or 6 years, I was running a team of 15 people. That is, that's an exceptional thing. Not saying that I'm exceptional, but saying that normally that can be a 15-year career progression in a larger company. And I think it's a matter of who's willing to take on responsibility, wear more hats, that type of thing. And it often ends up being people that have a stake or skin in the game in a startup. So you see this a lot, and you see people, learning as a generalist in a startup can often transcend the years of experience required to do a role in some cases. And I think that both sides are valuable. You know, I think that people who learn via startups are certainly well adapted to a bunch of different scenarios. The people inside larger companies, especially if you start inside of a larger company, you can get in a very niche area very quickly. And so it's good to poke your head up once in a while and look around and see what you don't know and how to maybe become more valuable in other areas too.
Ryan?
Yes. Similar to Brian, when I came on board at Radiant 6, I was a senior product manager, you know, had to figure out how to do a lot of things in order to contribute as we were scaling the company. A year and a half later, I was a vice president at Salesforce. So it was definitely this opportunity to, you know, in what normally at an established company, you could spend 10 years doing that. So you get these, you know, at a startup, you get this opportunity to really develop a broad range of skills that can help you go deeper as you specialize later. So I do think that, you know, also on the large company end of the spectrum, it's also great because you can you have more structure, but you can go much, much, much deeper than you can when you're at this fast paced startup and things are changing every quarter. Even some of the business fundamentals might be changing at a very rapid pace. When you have a well-established product market fit, it just kind of affords you this opportunity to develop really, really deep expertise that, again, you might not be able to do in a startup environment. So certainly lots of benefits to both those scenarios.
And the great thing about our environment here in Atlantic Canada, you can have both. Their opportunities, our sector is so diverse. So I want to talk about skill development. And one of the things that's so obvious is how fast technology is changing. What you worked on, the platforms you worked on 5 years ago look nothing like they look like here today. So what advice would you give for someone who is entering this field to help them understand this is a lifelong learning process, and how do they make that part of their DNA for an employer? Ryan, you want to get us kickstarted?
Yeah, I think really internalizing that adaptability is key. You know, you're not going to have one career, you're going to have many, many careers. And I think that's incredibly exciting. I also think that often we have this, I think it's a bit of a myth that you have to have this highly technical background to be successful in a career in technology in New Brunswick. So I would really encourage folks with other types of backgrounds, whether, you know, social science degrees, other parts where, you know, we need people that can join us, you know, whether it's in product management roles, technical documentation, product marketing, analyst relations. There's all kinds of functions that both startups and large companies need to fulfill. And the great thing about those is that while you may not be interested in that as a destination, you can get on board, onboard yourself into the industry, and then be able to grow from there. And so I think that looking at adaptability, not as a challenging thing, but as a way to pivot and grow yourself into different areas is a great opportunity for people in the industry.
So Ryan, tell us about how you approach your learning. Let's get personal here for a minute.
Yeah,
you know, sure. What do you do to stay current and to explore things outside of work too? How do you embrace lifelong learning?
Yeah, for me, a lot, how to start? There's many different ways. I think one is just, you know, constantly reading, not just about things going on in my industry, but adjacent industries. So trying to, you know, just have a curious mind, both in terms of different technologies, different businesses, what are the emerging trends, where do we see things going? I think that's been really key. I think for me, you know, I mentioned kind of at the start of my career that travel was a real passion. It remains so. So I think that, you know, whenever I go somewhere new, I view it as an opportunity to learn and see how things are done in different places. And I feel like there's often a lot of lessons, both from, you know, technology, but also not in technology, that we can apply to business life. Third, I think things like mentoring and volunteering. Mentoring often people look at it as maybe a one-way flow to help the mentee, but I think that mentors get a lot out of those relationships as well. So I think that, you know, those are three of the things that come to mind, although there's more.
Brian, I'm sure you're learning lots these days from your young family and children living at home and working at home at times, but let's talk beyond that. You'll learn lots of patience in those environments, I'm sure. How are you embracing your own lifelong learning and instilling that to people that are joining your organization? But what are you doing these days to keep yourself on your toes?
Yeah, so I think I truly believe in the lifelong learning as well. I do a lot of the same things that I did earlier in my career as a side hobby or project, UX design and getting involved in some development activities wherever I can to keep myself fresh. I also embrace learning new things. So I always want to know more about the industry I'm in, like Ryan, adjacent industries, what people are doing. I consume software. I consume as much reading as I can about different things. I think one of the most important skills these days, and I think 2020 to 2030 is going to be kind of the decade of emotional intelligence. So I think that, technical skills are one thing, and I think they can be taught to a large degree. Emotional intelligence is a really hard thing to grasp, and it's hard for some people to adapt to. But they always say someone said, software is easy, people are hard, right? And so once you figure out how people work and you can motivate them and get them to collaborate, a lot of it becomes easy. And you can look at that example in startups a lot. We tend to motivate people for low pay and terrible working conditions. Ryan and I remember working in this old farmhouse in Marysville, at Radiant 6, utterly terrible conditions, but we were all just excited to be there. You know what I mean? So figuring out how to motivate people for a common goal, that kind of thing, is very important.
It really bothers me a lot when people don't talk about emotional intelligence and those skills, and they call them soft skills. And just this week, I was reviewing a resume and it was listed as soft skills. How do we make people see the value of that kind of business acumen and just personal awareness and self-awareness of their own abilities? How do we make that more prevalent for students who are learning at university?
Well, you mentioned the old adage about the developer working in a dark room and getting past instructions under the door, and those days are gone. So I think when I look for people in technical or non-technical roles, I'm looking for people who understand that every job function is a pillar of the software development lifecycle, and that all of these people have a role to play. And to Ryan's point earlier about product owners don't just command people to do things. They're part of that cycle and they need to influence, and they're at the same level essentially, and they really need to support that software themselves together. And so, in my opinion, it's important to hire people who respect all their peers' contributions and work with them, not against them. So not pushing back constantly on every aspect of what you're doing, but realizing that everybody's tracking towards a common goal and how do we get there, as opposed to, how do I make this about me as an individual or my function?
Do you share those same thoughts, Ryan?
Absolutely. I think they're also accelerated by this pandemic that we're in. Empathy is probably one of the most important skill sets that we've all had to double down on during this, and recognizing that, hey, we're trying to further our businesses, but everybody needs to take care of their families, themselves. They're going to put that ahead of work, and they should. We need to be flexible, and we need to apply a lot of empathy in order to do that. So I completely agree.
Brian, tell us something that you're doing now. You've become an entrepreneur in residence, I believe, at East Valley Ventures. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing there. That feels like some more personal learning and growth for you.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, Jerry Pond and Bob Justice and crew invited me and honored me with the ability to help with East Valley Ventures and their portfolio. So I've invested in a number of the companies in the portfolio over the years, been involved in mentoring them. So this is really, I think, maybe a label to that in some ways. And it's, I guess it's executive in residence. Entrepreneur would imply that I'm an entrepreneur working with them, but.
Executive in residence. Yeah. Pardon me there, Brian.
I'm not a stickler on titles, but I really enjoy working with them. I had a meeting with Jerry and crew the other day, and we go through the portfolio companies. We figure out ways to help them. So it's really a great opportunity to dive into early stage startups, scale ups, figure out how to apply the learnings that I've had at both Cvent and Radiant 6 and others to kind of guide them in their way, not necessarily command and control. And as Ryan said, you get a lot more out of it sometimes than you give to them, perhaps. You learn a lot, and I'm really enjoying that. So.
Well, you both talked about mentorship, but it's also championing people and giving back. And I know that Unicorn in the Woods was recently launched. We've been at some events talking about that. You must be proud that you've played a role in those organizations that created really the impetus for that story.
Yeah, it's been great. And honestly, it's an exhausting story because here we are 10 years later still talking about it. I wish there was three or four more since then that people are talking about instead of just us, but Verafin perhaps is a great example of one that's just happened. It's been a wild ride to see where we've been since 2011 as well. So I think the injection of there's some capital that was injected and that helps, but it was also the mentorship. It was folks like Ryan, Dave Alston, Marcel LeBrun. I'm going to miss 100 names here if I start trying to name everybody, but all of these folks have jumped in to elevate a community or region really of people and to help them find similar success or just guide them in startups and scale ups and so on. So I think that the impact of that has yet to be seen because these things take a long time. You know, the average company takes 6 or 8 years really to see an exit or to see some kind of magical event like we've experienced. So
does the story get old for you, Ryan?
No, it doesn't. I think, both the notion, I'll put it this way. When I came to New Brunswick, we didn't know if we'd be staying or not. And, you know, now I'm really proud to call the place home. I think the sense of community, both within the technology community, but even outside of it, has been really instrumental.
So let's finish off on a really great high note. And tell me what you're excited about in 2021, personally, for your company, or just the overall tech scene here in Atlantic Canada.
I'm really excited to continue watching Netflix shows in my pajamas for the next half of the year here. I think that we're, 2020 was a year of adapting for a lot of companies and a lot of people. And we figure out that it wasn't all about being chained to a desk from 9 to 5 p.m. every day. And that there is a blending of work-life balance as opposed to kind of like a thin red line that separates the two, or a thick red line. I really like the fact that people are coming into their own and understanding that they can connect via video now, and it's almost as productive as meeting in person. And I think that there's a tremendous opportunity ahead of people who realize that the borders are eroding before our very eyes. You know, the challenges that we used to face to access people in other parts of the world are now not really there. And in fact, a lot of the perceptions are changing about where you live, where you work. So I'm excited what 2021 brings. Obviously, we have challenges as a country, as a globe, dealing with the pandemic, but it has also brought an incredible amount of positive change, I think, to our industry in particular.
I'm glad you're so optimistic. I share your thoughts. Ryan, hopefully you can give us some really great gems of wisdom about what you're excited about in 2021.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to... in many ways, 2020 has been a tragic year. When I look at 2021, I think about the fact that we've had probably about 5 to 10 years of digital transformation across every industry compressed into a single year. And I think that, has opened up this tremendous opportunity regionally that plays to the strengths here. We're not a great spot for example, business to consumer technologies historically, because we're away from the consumers physically. When you think about our larger population centers, I think that now, because all of our collaboration technologies, all of this transformation has happened, it just opens up this lens of being able to do much, much, much more and have much greater impact, than we could before. So I think things like, in the past you would think, well, okay, you have to fly from Fredericton or St. John or Moncton to Toronto or Montreal and then fly somewhere else to do business. We're going to come out of this in a place where that matters a heck of a lot less in 2021. And so I think that the entrepreneurial opportunities within the region just, I just think they open right up. And I think that it also makes it a great opportunity to draw newcomers to the region as well.
Well, look, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you both on the show. Such great advice for people who are listening about how to think about coming and joining organizations like yours. We're awful glad that you're here. We hope you continue to thrive. And thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Thanks so much, Kathy. It's been a pleasure.
A big thank you to Brian and Ryan for sharing their insights in today's episode. We covered a lot of ground. You know, I've met with many students over the years, and they often ask me, do I have enough technical experience, or did I take the right courses? I think what today's guests were able to demonstrate is just how important your passion, your overall community and job experience and education, and your desire for lifelong learning is in today's working environment. They talked about the importance of so many employability skills, skills like passion and hustle and research and drive, humility, adaptability, emotional intelligence, curiosity, communications, and so many more. Both Brian and Ryan talked about looking for people with this variety of skills and people who are focused on the team and the team achieving the outcomes they required. I loved how Brian brought this home, where he talked about how each job function is a pillar of the software development process, tracking towards a common goal, and how Ryan shared that it's not one career, but many careers, and adaptability is so key for growth and having a variety of opportunities. These two tech leaders provided invaluable advice. Check out more about our conversation at our Tech Impact website, which is techimpact.it, and go to the blog. Talk soon, everyone.
Tech Talks is brought to you by Tech Impact. Learn more at techimpact.it. The podcast is hosted by Tech Impact CEO, Kathy Simpson. It's produced by me, Matt George. It's engineered by the great Zachary Peltier, and is part of the Unsettled Media Podcast Network.